From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, nightmares. Here's what's happening. People across the United States Northeast digging themselves out after a powerful storm blanketed parts of the region would get this. More than 2 feet of snow, prompting airlines to cancel flights, contributing to at least 2 deaths in that area. Jeez, the weather's been something. The Biden administration has announced it will begin direct shipments of coronavirus vaccines now to retail pharmacies next week, expanding points of access for Americans to receive shots as concerns about the variants now of the virus begin to expand. The state of Oregon has put into law to decriminalize all drugs, and it goes into effect now, offering addicts rehabilitation instead of prison. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, I've been advocating this for years now, that we should be helping people, not putting them in jail for drugs. Your thoughts on all of this?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Oregon was one of the first states to decriminalize pot in 1973. I mean, you're talking about a war on drugs that was basically a war on humanity. And what it did, basically, is it took human beings that could have been productive, and it threw them into prisons basically all over the country, California being the worst example of this, for non-violent drug-related offenses, and just wasted human beings and at astronomical cost to states around the country. I think that the Oregon law, you know, that they just passed is absolutely brilliant in the sense that they're capitalizing right now on the massive tax revenue from their organic and potent weed sales that comes out of Oregon. They sell it all over the world. They sell it all around the United States. And they have such a massive surplus right now, despite their recession, that they're able to fund not only drug rehab programs, they're able to provide housing for the homeless, construction bills, and to provide job training. So it's a long time coming that drugs, nonviolent drug offenses, are no longer going to tie up the criminal justice system and let human beings rot away when, you know, drug rehab and more humanitarian ways of dealing with the problem is the way to go.
Might this be a model for the rest of the nation?
100%. It will be a model for the rest of the nation. I mean, it's going to be slow in some of the states where they, you know, they toss your life away for, you know, any drug-related offense. But I think it's the beginning of a trend that's going to sweep across the country eventually.
Okay, my friend. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com is his website. Great actor Hal Holbrook, the Emmy and Tony Award-winning actor, best known for his portrayal of Mark Twain and his very famous one-man show, has died at the age of 95 years old. Died at his home in Beverly Hills, California. No cause of death given at this time. Great actor. Tesla is recalling roughly 135,000 Model S luxury sedans and Model X sport utility vehicles over touchscreen failures, one of the electric car maker's largest ever safety actions there. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, who revealed plans to step down as CEO of the e-commerce giant later in 2021, explained the reasoning behind his decision in an email to company employees. In a very lengthy message, Bezos said his transition to the role of executive chairperson isn't about retiring. While the billionaire plans to maintain an active role in Amazon's leadership, he cited a desire to spend more time working on other projects. Dow Jones jumped nearly 600 points. GameStop heading for the biggest drop ever. What is happening? Let's check in with Charles Koppes, author of America's Financial Reckoning Day. What's going on with that situation, Chuck?
Well, stocks are up and a lot of volatility these days. This started actually last week, you know, if people noticed that. And I think it's everything that's wrong with crony capitalism today, George. You know, I mean, George Carlin said it's a big club and you're not in it, right? And these hedge funds started shorting this GameStop stock, large video retail chain out there and so on. And this, they're very shadowy. You know, I mean, there's legitimate shorting, but there's predatory shorting, and this is what they were kind of doing. And the Reddit social media news platform, they started alerting their subscribers, you know, day traders, to crush the hedge funds. So we saw a lot of that going on. It was all over Zero Hedge. They bid up the stock through Wall Street Bets and then the Robinhood brokerage. So this is a stock that went from $20 to $500 a share. And then they finally, hurt the hedge funds. Some of them had to be bailed out by Citadel and the others. But finally, this Robinhood brokerage firm suspended all trading, limited the shares and options and everything. Why did they do this? It's part of the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation. Not too many people know about that. They raised the brokerage deposit requirements by tenfold, in other words. And so they clear all the trades in settlement in the U.S. We're talking $2 quadrillion here annually. And this is controlled by Wall Street. So, you know, who exactly told them to do that? We don't know. There's now lawsuits pending and everything. But Sunday, we saw them alerting to the silver market, turning their attention. And this is what I deal in, you know, for 30 years.
Sure.
This is the most manipulated and rigged shorted market in the world. I mean, they were calling, it shouldn't be $25 an ounce, it should be $1,000 an ounce. I wouldn't disagree, but, you know, it's been flat for 10 years, and they've been controlling this through COMEX by suppressing silvers in the futures market and paper trading, in other words. So, you know, today's Groundhog Day, and I tell my clients for the last year or so, I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day because it's just wash, rinse, repeat.
You know, over again.
It's just the same old thing. So Monday we saw an increase in the mining shares, SLV, and so on. They were crowdsourcing it. All the dealers went, they stopped online trading. Premiums doubled. I had one of the wildest days yesterday ever. And so now the CME group, which controls COMEX, they came in, and what did they do? They raised the margin calls. I mean, this is crony capitalism. They stopped the rally. George, in closing, this reminds me of Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. Remember we talked about that last
week? That's right.
And she had the original version. She had silver slippers on the yellow brick road. This was the populist movement back then. That's what it is today, marching on the yellow brick road. And it represents the free silver movement, just like today. So I'd like to say people can download that Oz report I did if they sign up for my free newsletter at idpconsultinggroup.com. Latest newsletter I just put out 2 days ago. I had 100% open in 24 hours. Never saw that before. So I think we're going to win this battle, though, George.
It's a heck of a battle indeed, though, Chuck. Thanks so much. And as Chuck mentioned, it was Groundhog Day, and Punxsutawney Phil sees his shadow, predicting 6 more weeks of winter with below-average temperatures forecast. But heck, it's only 6 more weeks. We can endure that. In a moment, Harry Dent Jr. joins us to talk about the strange times we are in. One of his books, Zero Hour, Turning the Greatest Political and Financial Upheaval in Modern History to Your Advantage. Harry's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We've got a great show with you tonight, and the next couple hours are going to be outstanding for information. Harry Dent Jr. back with us, founder of the Dent Research, which publishes the newsletters Economy and Markets, Boom and Bust, and The Leading Edge, among others. He has an MBA from Harvard, was a consultant for several Fortune 100 companies while at Bain & Company, lectures widely. Harry is the author of Zero Hour, Turned the Greatest Political and Financial Upheaval in Modern History to Your Advantage. Harry, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Great. Nice to be back, George.
You too, indeed. I'm looking forward to all this. And what's your thoughts about what has happened to this Reddit and GameStop and all this stuff? What was this all about?
You know, George, it's the epitome of this giant bubble. I call it the markets on crack. They pumped so much money into the markets over the last 12 years to keep the economy from failing, the banks from failing originally. And it's the only thing that's kept an economy going after something I predicted 20-some years ago. The baby boom generation would finally peak in the greatest spending surge in history in 2007, and we would go into a weaker economy. We've been living off of quantitative easing ever since. They put so much money in the markets. You only see things like that happen when there's too much money swishing around, too easy to borrow on leverage at zero interest, and you get what Chuck said was totally right. what hedge funds and the smart and big money do. They watch what all the rest of us do. They have the best information, the fastest trading, everything, but they watch what we do. And when we go one way, they go against us, and they go with heavy leverage. And that's what happened here with GameStop. A lot of the smaller traders who now are on Reddit, you know, and Robinhood and all these things, and they can talk and stuff, they basically decided, why don't we do the same thing? We may be small, but if a bunch of us buy a stock that they're shorting and trying to kill with too much leverage, we can go the other way. And next thing you know, Melvin Capital loses $5 billion, a major hedge fund, 50% down in their fund in the month of January because a bunch of everyday traders did the same thing to them that they do to everybody else. So I love that. What I don't like, George, is the fact, again, there's so much liquidity to the market, biggest financial bubble ever. Let me give you a number on that, George. $520 trillion, six times global GDP. That's how much financial assets in the world are. It should be more like 200. You know, it should be, you know, two times GDP, not six. So this is what you see when there's too much money swishing around. I don't like the fact that hedge funds can buy on leverage. And now if small traders do the same thing, it's going to make the market even more crazy. But I will tell you one thing, George, that the hedge funds have been taught at least a temporary lesson here. They're going to have to be more careful when they do this predatory shorting that Chuck was talking about earlier. I think that is unfair. It's one thing. I think it should be that anybody, large or small, can bet, you know, I'm going to go long a stock or short or any investment. You shouldn't be able to do it with 10 to 20 times leverage and do this predatory stuff where you're basically, the intention is to a stock that's already weak, to push it down to force people to sell it. Or in this case, the everyday traders were pushing up a stock that had been pushed down by the hedge fund to throw it up to them so they would have to capitulate, cover their shorts. And when they cover their shorts, they have to turn around and buy the stock, which causes it to go up. So, and this is a record, I think, that I've seen, Joe. In one day, that stock traded at 482 high and down to 112 low in one
Jeez,
day.
Unbelievable.
That is not good for the market.
Now, who lost the money on that? All the younger investors who got in to push it up in the first place?
Well yeah, there's two stages. The hedge fund shorted first. We don't have as good information as the hedge funds, the big money. They can track everything. But it is not hard to track which stocks are being heavily shorted. That is an easy statistic. So these people saw that. But when they bought the stocks to push it back up, the hedge funds took the loss first. It was primarily Melvin Capital and a few others. So when they did this and the stock went up, these people lost money. They're shorting on high leverage, sometimes 10 to 20 times leverage. So they lost a lot of money first. Now, but to do that, all these traders had to buy kind of roughly concerted, and they push it way up. Look, this, George, is a $10 to $20 stock, okay? It's in trouble, has some potential for a turnaround, but it's $10, $20, and that's where it's going to end up at. They push it up to $482. Now, anybody doing that knows, it's like, remember the joke, of a bear's chasing you, you have to outrun your friend, not the bear. Those traders, small traders, start saying, well, wait a minute now we push it up so high, guess what? The first guy out does best. And the people who are slower get creamed, especially the ones that bought in later. So the hedge funds lose first, but then when it goes back down to 112, a lot of the small traders would have lost. Anybody that got in higher than 112, which would have probably been the majority, because most people are natural. The more they see something go up, the more they jump on it. So it's not a good thing for the markets. But George, think about the innocent bystanders just sitting in this stock. And all this happens, what are they going to make of this? Some people probably bought in when it was up, saying, well, my God, and then got killed. Other people, just probably sold, when it went down, and thinking, this is not good for the stock market.
No.
I think we shouldn't allow this type of leverage trading. Leverage should be for commercial companies that need to hedge the prices of their commodities or products or things like that. That's what it was intended for. Traders take over these futures and options and stuff and basically abuse it. I mean, I love what Chuck said, predatory investing. That is what it is. I do love that the hedge funds finally got done to them what they do every day. to everyday investors.
What do you think of Jeff Bezos stepping down this year as CEO of Amazon?
You know, I think it's great. Early in my career, I went from consulting to Fortune 100 companies at Bain & Company to new ventures, because I just bored with big companies. I like innovators. I like people who are changing things and doing especially radical change and stuff like that. And what I learned early on is that, you know, it takes a radical thinking, a very creative person to start a company,
yep.
You know, that's totally different. But as you start to grow, you need somebody to manage things systematically. I mean, Bill Gates started Microsoft, but it was Steve Ballmer that built that thing into a systematic big company. And I tell you, Jeff Bezos, to take this thing this far is a miracle, even Bill Gates. And I did that in my company. After consulting to so many new ventures and seeing how many entrepreneurs grew their company and then ruined it because they wouldn't give up control or wouldn't bring in systematic management, first thing I did when we were growing, I hired a guy named Rodney Johnson to manage my company and to make our investment strategy more systematic. So this is a good thing. There's nothing wrong. The markets go, oh, it won't work with us. He said he's going to be there, okay? It's a good sign that he's stepping back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not going anywhere, is he?
No, not when he has that much stake in the company.
Now, you have looked at this bubble that we could be in for some time. How devastating has COVID been to the economy, Harry, in your opinion?
Well, you know, really, it was set to knock down the economy. It was set to be a short-term depression. We had a Great Depression with 25% unemployment in the early 30s. I think we're going to head to something closer to that because this bubble is so big. But this was set to be a short-term depression. They were expecting 20% decline in GDP for, you know, several months or maybe a year. So what the Federal Reserve did, and people didn't fully get this, they printed as much money, $3.5 trillion, as they did in 80 months, you know, 7 years in the first big long quantitative easing. But they printed that much money in 8 months, starting with the repo crisis and then the COVID. COVID is what I call the perfect shock or the perfect trigger. We've got this bubble. The governments just keep doubling down because they know if it bursts at all, it's going to be nasty because they bid up so much in financial assets. They keep doubling down to protect the economy, but they know that if this the more they double down, the bigger the burst is going to be, and that's the way bubbles go. So they just really can't let up. It takes something to hit the economy and bring reality to it, and I think that's what happened. What we've seen here, George, is very simple. We had this big shock. They did print, and this time they didn't just print money and buy financial assets to drive them up, which I think is the worst thing to do. They did give more of the money, at least fiscal stimulus, in addition to the Fed. They gave about $3 trillion to consumers and businesses, okay? So that's a better way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a huge thing. Now they got a deficit that's going to be almost $4 trillion this year, and we're not even into a real downturn yet. And the economy came back strongly, but, George, I'm telling you, we've seen it. The V-shaped economy only takes us back to about 80% or so. Because there's major industries, we all know, entertainment and travel and a lot of retail industries and things are not coming back for a year or two or more. So this is no longer going to work, and we're not back in employment or overall levels that we were before. And the stocks are bid up like we're in the greatest boom in history. Why? Markets on crack. They buy, the central banks put money in the markets that didn't exist before, not like a financial firm or an investor selling something to buy something else. They put new money in. That means more money chasing all financial assets. They go up. But here's the other thing. They buy bonds primarily, which pushes down interest rates long-term and short-term. And that means the company and big companies can leverage up financial hedge funds and stuff to create more leverage, because now they see the market is predictable. Oh, the Fed is going to permanently drive up stocks with little shocks that don't last long. Oh, they're going to drive down interest rates, which drives up bonds. And so they bet with higher leverage, and then the lower interest rates on top make that leverage so cheap. So the Fed adds, you know, they've added $7.6 trillion over the last 12 years into the financial markets, And on top of that, all this leverage is added. So leverage is added on free money, and you get the greatest bubble in history, 520 trillion assets. That is, to be more precise, George, about a little over 100 trillion in stocks, 280 in real estate. It's always the biggest category, and about the rest, about 140 trillion in bonds.
All right, hold on, Harry. We're at a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about these bubbles right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Harry Dent. Harry's website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Harry, they say that in a couple of years, China is going to pass us up as the world's biggest economy. What do you think of that?
You know, they said that about Japan in 1989, and that was a lot easier, George, because they had about 40% of our population. I said, you mean the Japanese are going to be making $150,000 per capita, and we're going to be making $50,000? Are they that good? And they weren't. And I predicted the decline of Japan in the 90s, that they'd see a major downturn they would not come back from because their demographics were so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
After boom, and that the U.S. and Europe would rise instead. Now, here, this is a little different. China has made a massive expansion, much like Japan, urbanizing rapidly, but they have overexpanded. The 22% of condos and homes in urban China are empty. And at the same time, which no country has this, they have the highest price-to-income ratios because the government, top-down, has engineered a financial bubble there, similar to what the Fed is doing here to keep their economy growing faster than it should. And they're going to have the biggest reckoning. The U.S. was the epicenter. We were the emerging country in the early 1900s coming up into developed country status like China today. We were the epicenter of the Roaring 20s burst and the 29 to 32 burst and Great Depression. China's going to be the epicenter of this bubble. They're going to see the biggest burst. And I think, George, and I've been saying it for years, China's going to be the slowest country to come out. Their demographics, like Japan before them, have already peaked. Japan was the first country in the developed world, Asia, to peak in demographics. China's the first in the emerging world. It's going to be India that becomes the next China in the next global boom. China could not build one more condo or office building and fulfill the other 20% of their urbanization. They went from 20 to 60% in 30 years. That's miraculous, but they overdid it. They've overexpanded. Their government is going to lose as much or more credibility as central banks are going to use in the developed world. So I see China ultimately becoming large in the U.S. It's going to take longer, but I see by about the time they do that, maybe 2035 or so, India is going to be on their heels. India has higher population and at the same urbanization levels, higher GDP per capita. I can project, it's one of the things, simple things I can project in the future, demographic spending, how rich countries get by urbanization, and that varies a lot, George. And India is going to be richer than China down the road, larger economy, and even likely richer GDP per capita. And nobody sees that coming. So I think China's seen its best days. U.S. is going to go more sideways, and China will surpass it on population strength four times. But they're not going to surpass us a lot. And India is the next big thing.
Do you see China trying to take over Taiwan?
Yeah, they've been trying, but again, you got to remember, China is one of the last major countries in the world that's still hanging on to, oh, we got a, you know, autocratic, no democracy. We can manage state capitalism. Look, state control and free market capitalism are the worst combination. Okay,
that's true.
So and I think they're going to prove that. So I think their government's going to lose so much credibility, they're not going to be able to do anything.
Interesting. Now, when you talk about bubbles and bursting bubbles, are we talking about the stock market, real estate, or all of the above?
All of the above, George. This has been never before. I mean, in normal recessions, you know, central banks will lower interest rates and make reserves a little more accommodative and hope people will borrow more. Well, after the stellar 83 to 2007 greatest boom in history, where they were lowering interest rates even in boom times when they didn't need to stimulate the economy, by the time we went to 2008, 2009, deep recession, it started to look like a Great Depression. That's why they pulled out the fire hoses and stuff. So since then, They have put so much money, like I said earlier, in financial assets. Real estate is in a second major bubble. Tech stocks in a second major bubble. The first one peaked in early 2000. Second one, I think, peaking right here, give or take a few weeks or months. And that's a 20-year cycle we measure, as well as these 40-year generation cycles. And I think everything's going to go down. You have to realize, though, stocks always bubble the most out of all the assets. And high-end real estate also bubbles the most in real estate. So those are the two categories. You do not want to be owning a big seven-bedroom McMansion that's gone up the most when baby boomers are aging and don't have kids in the nest, and the millennials aren't going to have as many kids and aren't going to buy as big a house in their next stage. And you don't want to be in commercial real estate, especially high-end, and in cities with COVID now, because corporations cut their spending way faster and will sell way faster than people sell their homes. But yes, it's a bubble in everything. Stocks are the most extreme. George, I know this sounds astounding, but it happened 90 years ago on my biggest cycle for stocks. And if you look over since stocks were created in the late 1700s, 90-year super bubble cycle. Wow. We're right on it, like 29 to 32 and 1839 to 42 before that, the biggest bubbles. And depressions, bubbles burst. They burst faster than just normal debt bubbles because stocks can go down fast. How fast can stocks go down? Ask yourself. Well, look back at February, March of last year. 40% globally. Stocks dropped 40% in 5 weeks. That is money that disappears. And what does it disappear out of? 520 trillion assets. George, I've been predicting for years now that over $200 trillion of these financial assets, stocks, real estate, and not safe bonds, but, you know, junk bonds and corporate bonds, are going to disappear out of the economy. That's 3 times GDP. That alone will cause a depression for several years. And then we will come out of it because the millennial generation is going to pull us out of this from about 2023-24 forward. Just like the baby boomers pulled us out of the long inflationary recession from 68 to 82, from 83 to 2007. So I'm not like some economists, when we do go in this crash, will say, oh, we're in for a 10-year depression like the 30s. No, we're at the end of this slowdown of baby boom spending coming in the next few years. This bubble's got to crash and come down if we're going to clear the decks, unproductive investment, bad debts. You know that, George, there's 19% of large publicly traded companies cannot pay their debt service. Zombie companies, they call them. We got to get these failing things out of the way rather than propping them up. If we'd have let the 2008, I know this sounds stupid, but it's not. If we'd have let the 2008-9 recession, only 17 months down for stocks, last as long as the 29 to 32 and go as deep, we would have gotten rid of a lot of debt and bad companies, and we would come roaring out of the downturn instead of limping. We've only grown at 1.5% average in the last 12 years, despite massive amounts of infusions, which normally would create inflation and high growth. They didn't, because we're in a deleveraging era. High debt, bubbles always cause deleveraging, and bubbles always burst. And George, this is the largest in history, and it's the most pervasive and global. It's not going to be pretty.
So Joe Biden is not going to come out as a hero during these 4 years, I take it.
He's not, but at least he's walking in at the beginning. And, you know, I mean, Obama walked in and his economy was already down, so he didn't get blamed for that downturn.
Right.
He got blamed for not coming out of it strong enough. That was more the Fed's fault, in my view. But he's going to have a very tough time, and he probably will not want to run in 4 years because he's going to be older and this is going to beat him to death. But I don't think he'll be largely blamed. I know some people say, oh, we'll see, the stock market crashed because Biden was going to raise taxes and all this sort of stuff, and which he will, especially with the Democratic-leaning Senate now. But it's really going to burst because this bubble's been stretched so far. And the COVID thing did hit the economy hard enough, perfect trigger, that we can only recover so much, as I said earlier, and we're not going to get fully back to even. And with stocks priced, stocks are priced as if we're in the 90s, growing 4 to 5% with falling inflation, a beautiful economy. No, we're growing at 1.6% in the last 12 years, and we can't even get up to 2% inflation, which is the Fed's goal. This is the worst recovery in history. Stocks have the greatest run in history. This is the biggest disconnect between financial assets and the real economy, and Homer Simpson knows it, because they're, you know, this 1.6%, it's 4% growth on the high end, because, you know, 88% of stocks are owned by 10% of the people, 50% by 1%. So when they push up these financial assets, it's not helping everyday people. So the rich are spending as much as ever. Everyday people are not seeing rises of income or spending substantial. And that this boom is not sustainable. And when it goes down, the Fed's going to lose control, and they are going to look like, oh, they're like a drug pusher. They just pushed up financial assets on a financial drug called quantitative easing, created the biggest bubble in history, and it burst and wiped out hundreds of trillions of dollars of wealth in a couple of years. This is going to look like the worst policy in history, and even people like Warren Buffett think it's okay. This is not okay, mark my words. I've studied history. We've had bubbles before. They always burst badly. This makes the roaring 20s look like nothing. Jeez. Nothing.
And Harry, let me ask you this too. I've got a friend that has a small business in St. Louis. He was eligible and got a couple months ago $20,800 of forgivable money under the PPP program, the Payroll Protection Plan. And he just got his second round of another $20,800, which I assume they're going to forgive too. So he's gotten $41,000 of free,
yeah, on a phone call
of free money just applying for it. Now, I assume this is going all around the country with the stimulus packages that they passed. How can we afford to pay this out?
Well, George, you can't. $3.5 trillion in QE in the last year, $3.2 so far in what you've just described, fiscal stimulus, and Biden's asking immediately another $1.9. He may not quite get that. That, if you add all that up, like $7, $8 trillion, that's like 40% of GDP we're either printing or borrowing to keep an economy going, 40% of GDP. And to keep it hopefully back to 1.5%. This is insanity. You can't afford this. We're going to have a near $4 trillion deficit this year. We're not in a real downturn yet. When the bubble bursts and we have a real downturn, you're going to have $4 trillion plus deficits for 3 or 4 years. And our government debt, George, I've been predicting this for 10 years, okay? Because the debt's been doubling every two administrations. It got up to 20. You know, when Trump came in, 10 when Obama came in, I've been predicting it'll be close to 40 by 2024-25. And with these deficits, that's almost a slam dunk. We can't afford this. It's insanity.
Well, how are they coming up with the money? There's nothing behind it, backing it.
They borrow it. Look, bonds, the government keeps buying treasury bonds. The government's issuing record bonds, and then the Fed is buying them. Does that sound like cheating? Oh, guess what's happening in the stock market? Corporate earnings total are flat in the last 10 years. Earnings per share are going up because corporations are taking cheap money and a free lunch from the Fed and buying their own stocks. So companies are buying their own stocks. Governments are buying their own bonds. All of this is a mirage. It's creating a financial asset bubble. And I'll tell you what, The federal government and politicians ought to be twice as scared of this financial asset bubble, because when debts deleverage, more like in the Great Depression, companies got to go through Chapter 11 restructurings or Chapter 7 bankruptcies and all this. That takes some time, months or even years. Now, as I said earlier, financial markets, 29 to 32, in 34 months, stocks crashed 89%, the greatest in history. And again, just last year, with the COVID shock, 40% globally in just 5 weeks. So this is much more dangerous. The Federal Reserve and central banks around the world, to keep a deep recession from turning into depression, which it would have, and what I was forecasting, have pumped up a financial asset bubble like an atom bomb, just this giant mushroom that is going to kill them. They are going to lose control of this. Because remember what I said earlier? in 8 months, they printed as much as they did in 80 months, and add another $5 trillion of fiscal stimulus to that, you've got they're losing control. It's costing so much that this thing's just going to blow up. What are they going to print next time? $20 trillion? 100% of GDP to keep us out of the next recession? I am also predicting in the next several months, we're going to see a bigger crash than we saw in 2020. It's going to be 40% plus, up to 50% of the tech stock. So I also warn people, if you want to stay with the bubble, because, you know, it has kept going, and I've had to keep warning my subscribers, yeah, we thought so, but, you know, it looks like, you know, Trump got elected. He's going to cut taxes. You can't argue with that, you know. But when this thing blows, and I think it's coming as soon as this month, and at the latest it's going to move so fast, people will be blindsided, and they'll wish they'd have gotten out a little early than late.
You're not Chicken Little, are you?
No, I am not, because I am based on facts. I'm the only one in the world looking at history and facts. How bubbles build, they build in a progressive way. You look at the stock market, George. It's made more gains since March than you know, years before. That is an exponential thing. When it gets that exponential, it always bursts. And I can tell you from the beginning where it's going to go, back to the bubble origin. I am predicting, and then predicting the same target, whether the Dow went to 25 or 30 or 32 ahead, that it's going to end up around 5,000 by the late 2022 on my other very reliable cycle. I've got this 90-year bubble cycle, and the most reliable down cycle is every generation, every 40 years. 1942, late 1982, and ahead late 2022. So between now and then, we got the worst down cycle hitting and the biggest up cycle peaking.
Harry, we're going to come back in a moment at the top of the hour and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.